Well, good morning. Good morning. Good morning. What time is it? It's 10:15, right? According to my atomic clock, it's 10:15:11. And you're listening to On the Air with Glenn Kobel. And today we have Fred Malone back. Fred Malone is with the Marion Historical Society. And we missed him last month because of family problems. And that's all right. We understand that. You almost missed me this morning. My little puppy dog, you know, the one that I talk to every night to get my shows ready. Well, she was struggling. We were afraid. She was running around in circle. Thought she was going to croak. But I woke up this morning, finally, after I got her to sleep, and she's okay. So she's 16, so I'm one of these mornings I'm not going to be here. All right, we got Fred on microphone two. I hope you can hear.
Are we good here?
Yeah, we're good. We're excellent. Yeah, yeah. And for some reason or other this morning, all the pots are what we, the volume controls, they're all real hot. So I guess I'll have to be a little careful because some of them are crackly because they're too hot. So we'll try to get this straight. And Fred, welcome back.
Well,
we missed
you
last
much.
Month.
I appreciate it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, as I mentioned to you off air, we had a little incident with my father-in-law, but he's getting along better now. So,
Excellent.
Hopefully that doesn't occur again. We don't certainly don't want it to.
No.
But I understand your situation with your dog.
Yeah.
I have... currently just have one dog, but in the past we've had as many as four in the house at the same time.
Yeah.
And that almost sounds like maybe some seizures or something going on.
Yeah, I think so. She's 17 or 16.
Yeah.
So she's, you know, you worry about it. I've been worrying about her passing for probably 2 years.
Yeah.
Because when she hit, when she hit 14, I started thinking, I've never had a dog live to 15.
Yeah.
And she lived past 15. Now she's 16. So,
yeah. Well, it is an issue.
It's
and
life.
And we've become so attached to them.
Yeah.
You know, we've been rescuing dogs for 15 years, and that's all we ever have are rescue dogs.
Yeah.
And we try to give them a good home. And, mm-hmm. and generally, we end up with dogs that have special needs. You know,
mm-hmm.
they've either got some health concern or whatever the case might be. And currently the dog we have is a 7-year-old Cocker Spaniel. She just turned 7,
mm-hmm.
in fact, last week.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, and she was just a little over 6 when we got her, so we've had her just about a year. We got her November the 1st of last year,
mm-hmm.
and she had been in a puppy mill type situation.
Oh, yeah.
So she never lived in a house, always lived in a cage. I had to teach her how to walk on a leash. She didn't know how to play with toys. Didn't understand any of that, but this past year she's really come out of her shell and she's
moving right along.
Oh yeah,
and,
but it's such a joy to see a dog transform like that after a life that they've had, you know.
Yeah.
And don't know how many litters she had, but obviously from looking at her little underbelly, she had quite a few over the years. But yeah, I understand where you're coming from. I lost my coonhound last year about this time, and it was in October, and she was going on 14, and it's tough.
Yeah.
It really is tough.
Yeah.
You know, they become part of your family, and
sure.
especially when your kids are grown and, you know, you're empty nesters.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
kind of take the place of it.
They sure do.
So, you know, but you talk about having a dog 16. When I was born, a couple of months after I was born, my mother found a Cocker Spaniel puppy that was 8 weeks old, so it corresponded with my age. So I grew up with that dog, and the dog lived to be 21 years old.
Oh, my goodness.
21 years old.
I've never heard of a dog living past 18.
She was 21. She had pretty much lost her hearing, and her sight was going. And really, she could have probably lived a little bit longer, but she had such bad arthritis. And again, not being able to hear and her sight going... we decided to have her put down, but you know I couldn't do it, and I had since married at that time, and I just couldn't take the dog. Yeah, so my mother did, and she actually took it up to our farm first to have it let it run around a little bit before she took it to the vet. And mother said, you know, remarkably, the dog jumped out of the car, ran around like it was a puppy, you know. And it's like, well, do I or don't I, you know? But 21 years old, that's a pretty good record for a dog.
I've never heard of a dog yet living that long.
And she wasn't a pure breed. She was a mix between a Cocker Spaniel and a Terrier mix, but had the Cocker Spaniel features and temperament and disposition. attention. But I can still get misty eyes thinking about that dog because, you know, I grew up with that dog.
Sure.
That's hard.
The dog that we have right now was given to, it was going to be put down by a lady who couldn't handle the dog because the dog would nip at her and she was almost blind.
Yeah, happens.
Yeah, I'm not the dog, but the lady was almost blind.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And she'd reach down to pat her, and the dog didn't know it, and she'd bite her.
Scare her.
So she was going to have her put down, and she was a member of our credit union. So I said, oh, don't kill that poor puppy. I had two dogs at the time.
Uh-huh.
I took her home, much to my wife's chagrin. And so we've had her ever since, and she was probably 6 months old when I took her home. So that's why we're guessing she's a little over 16. But she went blind, the dog did, early, and that's why we think she was nipping, because she was having trouble with her
eyes. With her sight, right.
And she's done very well. And when she, the nice thing about it is we've given her 16 years of joy.
That's,
And if she goes to sleep some night, that would be wonderful.
Yeah.
Or if we have to have her put down.
You have to look at it from the standpoint of you made that dog's life so much better by taking that dog and saving it.
Yeah, it would be dead.
And there are, you know, and I'm glad to say that there are so many more rescue groups now together that are saving dogs, and not just, you know, the kill shelters are pretty well disappearing from the scene.
Good.
It's becoming mostly no kill. I know up in Wyandotte County, the folks that run that shelter up there over the years, they have done a wonderful job in saving dogs. It's a no kill shelter, and I've gotten dogs from them before as well. But you know, I just hate to not give a dog a second chance. Now, there are circumstances, you know, where a dog does get mean and attacks people, and, that, you know, it happens. But for the most part, for someone to take a dog and grow tired of it and just take it in and have it down is just it's a crime in itself.
To see that. Well, you know what the dog's done for me is, and you're not, I don't believe you're as old as I am, but as you get into your 70s, you start thinking about your own mortality.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I've been thinking, well, if I have to put her down, if we can do it as gently as possible, you know, someday she's not going to be able to get up because she's feeble now.
Right.
And the day that she can't get up and move around probably is the day. But it's made me start to think about my final days.
Sure.
And I've kind of changed my mind on my beliefs about allowing old folks to go.
I understand fully what you're saying. Yeah,
Because I
entirely
think I'd rather have a shot.
Yeah,
6 months before I have to go through, you know, horrible pain and stuff like
Well, you know, and this is a whole other subject that you can talk about.
Sure.
But I sometimes think that Dr. Kevorkian wasn't that far off in his thinking.
Yeah.
Because you know, and again, it's a touchy subject. Assisted suicide is a touchy subject, but there are cases when people are in extreme pain and anguish that I do believe that the humanitarian thing would be to aid them or at least provide that service to them, just like we do our pets. Speaking of aged pets, and I don't mean to get off on this, but Charlie and I used to do this a lot. We'd start talking about something, and it might not be history, but it was just kind of fun, and I think people enjoy it. But I had an aunt that had a cat that grew to be very old, and my aunt worked at the Sears and Roebuck store in Logan, Ohio, where I spent most of my childhood, and she would come home every night, and this cat that she had always laid in front of a big picture window in the sun, and kind of warmed itself and slept there and all. And so for years and years and years, every day when she would come home from work, this cat would be laying in front of the picture window. And she always thought, one of these days I'm going to come home and that cat's just going to have gone to sleep and not awakened.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the cat became 16, and then the cat became 18, and then the cat became 20, and 22, and 23,
Holy
and 24. And finally, after the cat had turned 25 years old, my aunt came home one day from work, and it was sound asleep in front of the picture window, dead. But that cat lived to be 25 years old, and I never knew of an animal to live 25 years old.
You're a rabbit's foot for animals.
Evidently.
I
didn't have that close of association with that cat, but To think that a cat or a dog could live that long is almost unbelievable. But, you know, especially in today's environment and the atmosphere and the kind of food that they have and the kind of medical care that you can get. It isn't unusual now for dogs and cats to live longer because people do take care of them most of the time. Yeah. So they get good care just like human beings do. Now, with regard to having an animal put down, I don't know who your veterinarian is, but our veterinarian for years have been the Lust family. Mm-hmm. And when our beloved Betty became stricken with cancer to the point where she couldn't go any longer, I asked Ryan to come to the house and do it, and he did.
Oh, my.
So she was able to die in her own bed peacefully with no struggles, and it meant a world to me and to my wife because she was a beloved pet. She was a special dog, and just having them agree to do that was... I thought that was above and beyond.
Oh, that way is way beyond. Yeah. Well, since we've lived here in Marion, we had to put two dogs down that we moved here with. One was a very big dog, and one was a very little dog. And we found a place out in I can't remember. It's out west of town. Anyway, this veterinary office, I went out there, and I felt very good about taking our dogs out there, and they would allow us. And some people want to be with their dog as it passes. We did not.
Really?
We didn't want to see the...
I've always wanted to be right there with them, hanging on to them and letting them know that I'm there. But everyone's different.
You know? Well, and this, the nice thing about this particular veterinary place is that I asked him, I said, can I pay up front so I don't even have to stand around while... And they agreed, and we... took the big dog I'm talking about now. We took him in, and the whole group gathered around the dog, put their arms around him, and that's the
last
the
dog I felt
saw.
Comfort. Yeah. The dog felt comfort, right.
Yeah, we're going to have to quit this. I'm going to start crying.
Well, I know. And just one last thought. My wife and I have been married now, we've had six dogs that we've had to put down or died on their own. One or two of them, I think, died on their own. But all of our dogs were cremated, and we have their ashes in our front window.
Oh, fantastic. Well, we have a caller. Let's see what the caller wants to say. Hi, caller. You're on the air. How can we help you?
Hi, this is Ted Williams, the man with the golden voice, and I'm calling 107.1 FM WWGH. and I thought I was speaking to Scott Spears, and I apologize for interrupting your show.
That's all right, Ted. It's good to hear you. I'm Glenn Coble, and we are on the air with Fred Malone.
Okay, and what is your show about, if you don't mind me asking?
Right now, we happen to be, the show is called On the Air, and right now, Fred and I are talking about puppy dogs and kitty cats that, you know, that we have to put down.
Oh, okay, household pet.
I'm sorry?
Household pet.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, and so...
Well, you know what? I've never owned a pet, and I'll tell you why, real briefly.
Sure.
I lived in housing projects in Brooklyn, New York, and I was born and raised in Brooklyn. Not that that really matters during your show right now, but I always wanted a pet, and all of my friends always had one. But I am more partial to dogs than kitty cats.
Sure.
Because cats seem to be so sneaky.
They are. You know? You got minds of their own.
Yes, absolutely. And when you're sitting there and not thinking about nothing, all of a sudden here comes a little fur ball, rubbing against your ankles and all. You know, you're real sneaky. Now, I love big cats. Of course, cats, like lions and tigers and all those things.
Oh, yeah.
I love them. Tremendously.
Don't put one in your house,
Scott,
Ted.
When President Trump announced he was running for
president,
we're
on a break. Hang on, Ted.
Egotistical jerk.
Yes, I do remember that. Has your mind changed?
Well, no.
No?
See, you thought I meant that in a negative way. Rookie mistake.
WWGH Radio, 107.1 FM. Don't miss it.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the Lingo.
GOAT, G-O-A-T, acronym, stands for Greatest of All Time. As in, spaghetti sandwiches for dinner? They're my fave. Dad, you're the GOAT.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
Well, you know, we're back on the air, Ted, and it's kind of interesting. We just had a public service announcement talking about GOAT, greatest of all times. And, Ted, you have the greatest of all times voices. He's the golden voice of WWGH. How you doing? Oh, did we lose him? Oh, shoot.
Oh, we must have lost him.
We must have lost him. All right. Well, we'll get back to those discussions. About our kitty cats and whatever else you brought in. You brought a bunch of stuff.
Oh, yeah. Well, we'll talk a little bit about history here as we move along and about some things that are going on. But I did want to express that about the animals because, animals have been such a big part of my life. I grew up on a dairy. I think I mentioned the first time you and I got together here a couple of months ago, I grew up on a dairy farm in southern Ohio, just outside of Lucasville. And we had 110 head of Jersey cattle on our farm and had our own milking operation and had, trucks and we sold milk and cottage cheese and eggs and all that kind of good stuff. And so having grown up around all kinds of animals, had my own horse when I was young, animals are just, they mean so much to me.
Yeah.
And I've never been without a dog, and I just turned 70 a couple of months ago, so now I'm in that category.
You're an old guy now.
Yeah,
finally.
I'm in that category now. So, when you get to, as you said, you start to think about your own mortality, and of course, my parents are all gone. My aunts and uncles are all gone. I basically don't have any living relatives other than a brother who's turning 80 this month, 10 years older than
I am. Good for him.
Other than my wife's family, and she still has both of her parents. She's a little younger than I am.
Wow.
So it makes you think, about your own mortality.
Sure.
And my son lives in Florida, so we don't have, other than telephones and that type of thing, we don't have a whole lot of contact with him. We see him once a year. So the dogs have become our family.
Yeah, they do.
And you put your whole soul and effort into trying to give them a good life. And I remember not too many years ago, before both of us retired, we were taking care of four dogs at a time. And at that time, my wife was teaching school up in Tiffin, so she had like almost an hour's drive every morning to get to school.
Yeah.
So she'd get up at 5:30, and I'd get up with her, and we fed four dogs individually. They all had their own bowls. They all ate in a separate place in the house.
Yeah.
And, she had to get ready to go to school, and at that time I was working for the sheriff's department, so I had to get ready to go to work as well. And I oftentimes look back and I think, how do we do that? How in the world did we hold down two jobs, keep a house, and keep four dogs at the same time? And I couldn't do it now. It's all I can do to take care of one. So.
My daughter lives out in North Carolina, and she has four children and a husband, and she has a dog, and she has five chickens, and I think that's it. But when we go out to visit her, I say to her, payback as hell.
Yeah, right.
And I also point out to her, honey, enjoy this because when you get to be my age, you'll wish you could do it just
you
for
do.
A few days.
You really do. You really do. You wonder how you managed to do it. But on the other hand, you do miss it.
Yeah, you do.
I mean, you really do. And I was laying in bed this morning thinking about my mother. She's been gone now 10 years. And my dad's been gone 10 years. And I think, wow, I sure wish I could get a couple of those days back.
Yeah,
So.
Now, have you found yourself, as you closed in on 70, have you found yourself getting more and more philosophical?
Oh, yeah.
I have.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think I started to get that way maybe even 10 years ago.
Yeah,
but
I did.
It's been more so now. And I think my wife's about 10, is 10 years younger than I. So she gets a little upset with me sometimes, I think, because I do start to reminisce and start being philosophical about things. And I talk about, there's an age difference. And at some point in time, I'm going to go before you unless something catastrophic happens.
Yeah.
And I think about those things, And you do wonder. Now, I was fortunate. Both of my parents lived to be 92. So
Fantastic. Hopefully
I have the same outlook on life. But you never know. You don't know what's around the bend.
Well,
we don't travel as much as we used to. So that doesn't concern me too much. But shoot, just driving to the store, you can get in a car accident.
You can. I've told my audience probably too many times before, but my wife's, both of her parents and all four of her grandparents lived way into their 90s.
Yeah, that's
so
great.
She's going to be around a long time after.
She's got a good line. She's got a good line.
And not so in my family. And my father and grandmother both died of stroke problems. Mm-hmm. And I pretty much know that I'm going to go before her. And I have now gotten very philosophical about making sure that her life is as pleasant as it can be.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, we have to think about those things.
Sure.
And there's been a lot of cancer in my mother's family. There were seven siblings in her family, and they all died of some cancer-related disease.
My.
So that's out. That also looms on my in my thinking because, you know, you sometimes think, well, if that gene is hereditary, which I think in a lot of cases they think a lot of these things are, you have to think about that.
Yep.
And you just think, well, it's going to happen someday. You just don't know when or where or what kind.
Yeah.
But you can't live with it in your mind all the time, and I've learned to kind of adapt myself to that. And I've known people that dwelled on those types of aspects.
No, you can't do that.
And
it'll drive you crazy.
You can't do that.
Yeah.
So I think getting involved, especially when you retire and have no longer have that daily job to get up and go to, getting involved with some sort of volunteer activity has been a tremendous salvation for me.
I think it adds to your life, livelihood.
It really does. Yeah. You know, people that listen to me and know me, you know, they know I'm involved with the Historical Society here locally. I'm involved with the Historical Society up in Wyandotte County in Sycamore, with Malabar Farm, with Liberty Aviation Museum up in Port Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, gee, how did I ever have time to work?
But
if you don't engage yourself in something like this,
you will fade away.
I've known plenty of people that retired with absolutely nothing to do, and they were gone in a year.
Yeah, I think there are statistics that prove that.
Because you cannot sit in an easy chair and watch television
16
hours a day.
You'll die of hemorrhoids if nothing else.
Well, it just doesn't work.
Yeah,
no. Your body will start to shut down on its own. So, you know, I'm assuming that most of the time, I know with Charlie and I's audience, when I was on with Charlie, that a lot of our people were older people, people past 60.
Sure.
And, you know, I always want to say, hey, get out there and find something to do. If you don't have anything to do, call me. I'll get you involved in one of the activities that I'm involved in because we always need volunteers.
Yep.
Always need volunteers.
Yeah. I hope that we have some young people listening to
this show. Well, I do, and I think we do because I've listened to, you know, your show, and of course, when I wasn't on with Charlie, I listened all the time. And so he got a lot of younger people involved, a lot of people calling in, and hopefully you can carry that on, and the two of us, when we get together once a month, we can carry that on too. And I like to hear from people. You know, I may not always have all the answers. I'm a novice when it comes to Marian history. I've only been involved with Marian history for about 10 or 12 years. So I'm a novice. You know, Charlie knew it well.
Oh, he did.
Randy Wendland knows a lot. He can tell you a lot about Marian history. And he wasn't from here. You know, he grew up down in Caldwell, down in the southeastern part of Ohio as well. Carol Neidhart, a wealth of information. I always refer to Carol as Mr. History, Mr. Marion County History.
Mm-hmm.
Written several books, a wonderful artist.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, you know, Carol's aging as well.
Mm-hmm. We all are.
We all are, and we're getting there, but we have to pass it on to somebody else.
Yeah, sure do.
And one of my goals with Malabar has been to try to bring new people onto our board. In fact, I've got a candidate that I'm sponsoring now for board membership at Malabar that's 28 years old. But if we don't get people to replace us, there's no one going to be there to pick up the mantle
when
we're gone.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, most historical societies, not just here in Marion County, but throughout the state of Ohio and the U.S., they're unfortunately decreasing in membership because the membership is passing on, and they're not bringing people in to take their place.
And their boards are all over 70.
Exactly, right, absolutely. Yeah, I looked at the board age at Malabar, and our median age is like 73.
Oh, my. Yeah.
So that's not good. That's not good for the future.
Well, I think that this, a lot of people, well, all of us, would like to see this virus go away.
Oh,
but I think it's helped, it's going to help us down the way, because I think it's going to involve our younger people in life, which they haven't been so involved in.
Absolutely.
Now, they're still going to have the raves, and you're going to see kids doing really stupid stuff.
Well, we all did. Just, yeah, I did some of those things 50 happens. Years ago, too.
Yeah, but I think there maybe it's only 5%, but there will be a small percentage that will become much more active because they have to be and they want to be. Yeah.
And the Marion County Historical Society, kind of, we'll kind of morph into that.
Yeah.
The Marion County Historical Society, with our former director, Gail Martin, kind of got this ball rolling about 15 years ago when she started a program called Night at Heritage Hall. Now, that's about the time that the movie Night at the Museum came out, where the museum characters all became, you know, alive, and the museum became alive after hours. So we started this, or she started this program, I think it's about 15 years now, and we've carried it on since Gail retired. But we do it every March. And unfortunately, this year we couldn't do it because of COVID. That's about the same time COVID hit was when we always did our Night at Heritage Hall, which was always the last weekend in March, where we darken the museum. We have about 60 characters that come alive in the museum. They talk, they're characters from either Marion's history, Ohio history, even U.S. history. And that involved a lot of younger people, simply because there were a lot of young people involved in the early days of Marion County history. Newsboys, for instance, when Florence Harding started the newsboy program for the Marion Star when her husband was running the Star, that created a lot of openings for kids to make a few dollars, and it provided a service for the people that took the Marion Star, because now they could get home delivery.
Yeah.
Or they could buy it on the street corner. They didn't have to go down to the newspaper office and buy a copy every day.
Right.
So one of the things that we always have at Night at Heritage Hall are four or five newsboys running around selling the Star.
Is that right?
And so that led to children of pioneers and children of historically important people in Marion County. So we got more kids involved, more kids involved, more kids involved. So
I assume you're hoping that'll go on this coming
absolutely.
Year.
Well, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, we've unfortunately, we've had to postpone or cancel all of our activities for this year.
That was my next question. How about the presidential thing?
That included our presidential lunch. That included our luncheon with the first ladies. And unfortunately, it included the dinner with the presidents, which was scheduled to be the first Saturday in November.
Yeah,
we just made that decision at our last board meeting that had to be canceled as well.
My wife and I are going over. You had asked me if I'd be interested in doing one of the presidents, and my wife and I have gone over it, and yeah, I would.
So. I think, and it's grown. We are now able to do, I think at last count I had about 37 presidents that we were able to do. So that's only about 10 short.
Yeah.
And we don't do living presidents. They have to be deceased.
I'm having an old man block here. Who had you asked me to do?
James Buchanan.
Yes, Buchanan. Yeah, I've done some rudimentary research.
Well, he was an interesting president because he preceded Lincoln, obviously. He was the last president to serve before Lincoln took office. So he was right at the cusp of the Civil War.
Yeah.
And a lot of things that he did or didn't do had an effect on President Lincoln taking power. So
that's kind of the reason why I'm backing off of it, because he was kind of not a bad guy, but he was kind of a do-nothing president.
Well, in a sense he was, but his character as the 15th president was extremely important, because it gave a lot of forethought to what Lincoln was stepping into, and I think it had an awful lot to do with Lincoln's plans. Mm-hmm. Now, I just finished reading a book, and I can't remember the title of it now. I should have written it down before I brought it in. But it's a new book. It just came out here a few months ago, and it's about Lincoln's trip from Springfield to Washington, that train trip that he took.
Went
all over the place. Came through Cincinnati, Cleveland, and Columbus.
Yeah.
But it did.
You were really a pioneer.
I'm sorry.
You were the first viral video in 2011.
Yes, that is true. But I have a problem since then. I was hoping you can help me with that, Scott.
What's that?
Well, I can't seem to find the right antibiotic to get rid of this viral video.
WWGH Radio, 107.1 FM, The Talking Place.
GTG, BRB, OMW, be there in a few. You may think that these kinds of texts are fine because of their length, and you can easily send them at a stoplight. But no, answering one text can take your attention away from the road for 5 seconds. And traveling at 55 miles an hour, that's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Make good decisions. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, Noise, and the Ad Council.
I'm sorry to our listeners. I did that in honor of Charlie. That's Charlie, right. And Fred used to run right through those things.
Do it all the time.
Well, keep on going.
Okay, but anyway, in this book, and I when I come back the next time, I'll bring the book in or write down the title of it, because it is a very interesting book. But as anyone that has studied Lincoln knows, he didn't make a straight shot from Springfield to Washington, which he could have done.
Yeah.
Because he was still considered one of the Western presidents at that time. Up until that time, all of our presidents were basically Eastern Seaboard presidents. Right. They all came from the eastern part of the country. And Ohio and Illinois, Indiana, that was still the West. So since he was a Western president, he wasn't really known. And all of his votes basically came from the Midwest and the West to give him the election. He didn't win by a landslide, let's put it that way. So when he made his trip from Springfield to Washington, he did so that he could touch as many states as he could, especially the northeastern states. Mm-hmm. So the trip took around 45 days. Which
I didn't know.
He could have taken just a few days, but because they did all that and they stopped over in some places, they stayed a couple of nights. He gave a lot of speeches. It took several days to get there. So this book is based on that trip. Now, there was another book written right prior to this book, also in 2020, came out, I think, in January. This one came out in April or May. That was also about the trip, but it was more about the plot to assassinate Lincoln before he got to Washington to take the oath of office.
Yeah, I've heard.
So this author spent most of his time talking about the plot that was developing and the Allen Pinkerton Agency, and we all know the Pinkerton Agency, which is still in business today. They were the ones that uncovered the plot, and they
weren't
were the
they
ones
the first Secret Service organization?
Kind of loosely, right.
Go ahead.
But they were the ones that uncovered the plot, and Allen Pinkerton was the one that basically kept Lincoln alive between Springfield and Washington, D.C., because the plot was to actually assassinate him when he reached Baltimore, Maryland.
Oh.
So he was never going to take the oath of office. So they spent most of their time talking about the plot and how it was averted and how Lincoln was kept from being assassinated. The new book, which came out in May, this particular author mentions the plot, but he talks more about each stop that Lincoln made along the way and what he talked about and what he saw and the crowds and all that type of thing. And it's such an interesting read because you can really get a sense of how Lincoln felt as he made that trip from Springfield to Washington, D.C., and how overwhelmed he was and the family was with the reception that he received. Because people were very enthused about his election, at least the people where he was stopping.
He had to be frightened, though.
Well, and he was, because, again, he had in the back of his mind, there's this plot to assassinate me before I get there, knowing full well that it was going to take place in Baltimore. So, you know, you don't know what to expect, whether someone's going to try to do it before that or not. But the thing I really enjoyed about the book was it talked about intricate little details of each particular stop along the way. And one of the things that I thought was very interesting was, and I don't remember what hotel it was, I think it was in New York. Now, mind you, it's 1861, still February, March of 1861, when he's making this trip. But he stops in New York. I can't remember the name of the hotel. It's an 8-floor hotel. And one of the things that really stuck in my mind was in this hotel, in the suite that Lincoln had, they had flush toilets. Now, think about that.
That's unusual.
Flush toilets in 1861 when most people were still using outhouses.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you think about flush toilets in those days and you've ever been in a really old home that still has the tank that sets above the toilet.
So it can
it's gravity all gravity fed. Yeah. Right. Now, in a particular case of a large hotel with 8 floors and probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 200 to 250 rooms, you had a big tank that set up on the roof of the hotel just like a big water tank that Marion has to bring water from the reservoir or wherever it brings it into your home. So this big tank that's set up on the roof of the hotel might have held 5,000, 10,000 gallons. So all the pipes that came, you got one single pipe coming down from this tank, and then all these other pipes going to feed all these gravity flow toilets.
That could get noisy.
Eight floors. Yeah. Eight floors.
Holy cow.
So it's amazing to think that in 1861, somebody was even thinking about something like a flush toilet.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of interesting.
So I definitely got to bring the title of this book in because I know there's people out there that would probably enjoy reading it. It was fascinating. It's one of those books that once you start, you just can't put down because of all the details that are involved. And if you're a historian or if you have any minor interest in history, you know, we historians dwell on detail.
Yeah, yeah. I've known a few in my day, and I know that. Now, I do not read very much because I am slightly dyslexic,
I remember
and it,
you saying
and it
that,
causes
yeah.
me problems when yeah. I fall asleep when I read.
Yeah.
But I love listening to history, and I loved history in college and high school, but I've never been able to get deeply into it because you really need to be able to read to
you
get
do
down
and
to that.
And,
yeah.
and as much as I've hated this whole COVID thing because of what it's done to our lives,
I bet you've read a lot now.
I've probably read two dozen books since COVID started, and I've always been a reader. I come from a family of readers, and I've always got a book going.
Yeah,
but this is probably the first time in years that I've really been able to concentrate more on reading books. And I must confess that at times I have two or three going at once.
Yeah, yeah.
How
do you keep your brain straight on that?
Well, I think it helps. I think it helps my brain. You know, some people, you know, they talk about, oh, geez, when I get to be, you know, 70 years old, I'm not going to be it. Well, you have to keep exercising your mind.
You do, yes.
My mother was a great reader, and she did a lot of crossword puzzles. Now, I haven't gotten into crossword puzzles yet. But I have inherited that reading gene from her and from the other part of the family. I don't know. I think it helps to keep my mind clear. Now, memory-wise, I sometimes can't remember what I did yesterday or last week. Yeah. But I can tell you about a book I read a couple of months ago or even years ago. So I really do think it helps my memory process.
I announced you as Ted Malone.
No problem.
And I do that a lot. I do that a lot. I've done it all my life.
Oh,
my
sure.
wife, I said to my wife the other day, I announced this guy on the air, and I gave his wrong name. And she said, you've been doing that since I knew you. And my wife's known me a long time.
Charlie used to call me Ted once in
a while. Is that right?
So that's no problem. No problem. Well, but anyway, getting back to this whole story of Lincoln and his trip to Washington, it really is an interesting story. And the whole thing with Pinkerton, too, is also a very interesting story. Both of those books, and I'll bring the titles of both of them in so I can pass them along.
Sure.
Because there are a lot of people out there that maybe don't have a whole lot of interest in a lot of our U.S. presidents, but I think Lincoln always has held high interest in most everyone's minds.
Now, was he as wonderful a president as we have mythologically made him?
Well, I think sometimes we paint him as larger than life.
We do.
He had his faults, just like everybody else. But yes, I do think that I think he was the right man for the time.
Must have had a big intellect.
Well, he did. He was a voracious reader.
Yeah,
he read everything he could get his hands on when he was a child.
Yeah,
of course he was an attorney. He practiced law with his partner. I can't remember his first name. His last name was Herndon, in Springfield, Illinois. And in fact, was practicing attorney when he was elected president out there. Yep. He did only serve one term in Congress. He served a 2-year term in Congress in the 1850s. And, of course, he ran unsuccessfully against Stephen Douglas for a Senate seat. Yeah. Yes, I do really think that he had great intellect. I think he had a lot of intestinal fortitude.
He had to, yes.
To be able to assume the presidency at the time he did.
Did you know that he's in the Wrestler Hall of Fame?
Well, you know, yes, I did, actually. I did know that.
He won 200 bouts.
Well, and you have to think of his stature and his ability and what he was able to do when he was a young man.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of what framed Lincoln's time in the White House and what pushed him in the direction it did was Buchanan. because Buchanan did kind of sit on his hands.
Did they know each other? Were they friends? Do you know?
No, they weren't friends at all. In fact,
opposite side of the aisle.
Well, the only time they really met each other was on the day of the swearing-in.
Oh my!
And that was for a brief time in the morning when they rode the carriage together. So
sounds like the current president and the previous president.
Yeah. Almost. Yeah. But yes, I think we do have to. We sometimes hold Lincoln in maybe a higher esteem than what we would, because after all, he was a man.
Yeah.
But his character, I think, was impeccable. I think there is some question about the Emancipation Proclamation and that whole theory. I think there were some underlying political motives there, not just necessarily his thinking for all men were created equal.
Yeah, a lot of people think that he really didn't care about slavery when he first came into office.
Well, and that's, to some extent, that's true.
Yeah.
There were political motives involved there, and there was a movie that came out a few years ago called Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most politically correct movies I've watched in decades involving Lincoln. And that guy, I can't remember his name now, but he did a wonderful job.
Yeah,
he did. But I think that was a Steven Spielberg, maybe. I can't remember.
It might have been, yes.
But they did a lot of good research on that, and there were a lot of facts brought out. And I think some people might have been offended that they did portray his reasoning for Emancipation Proclamation more so along the lines of its political factors, not so necessarily its anti-slavery. Now, that's not to say he was not anti-slavery, because he was anti-slavery.
Yeah, he didn't own slaves.
However, his wife's family did.
Oh, I didn't know that.
His wife, I'm thinking
Julia.
Were
they from Kentucky?
They were from the South, and his wife's family held slaves when Lincoln was elected and went into the White House. In fact, some of her relatives fought on the Confederacy.
Oh,
so there were some issues there, and of course she had some mental issues too.
That did
not help matters, which I think bore on him quite a bit.
She sounded like she might have been manic depressive.
She was manic depressive. She was also uncontrollable in spending.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's a whole other story.
And they didn't have credit cards back then.
No, they didn't, but she ran up credit quite a bit.
Okay,
so that was an issue as well. But anyway, I would strongly recommend the book. And again, I apologize for not having brought the title with me, but I'll make sure I bring it next time so we can talk about it.
Looking forward to that. We only have 2 minutes left to go, so we'll not get into anything new. I've often wondered if Ulysses S. Grant, who was his vice president, I wonder if they got along. Do you know anything about that?
Well, they became friends because of the war.
Yeah, okay.
Lincoln went through a series of about 8 or 10, and I can't remember exactly how many, generals before he finally found someone that could do what
Didn't
needed
he go
to be
through
done.
Grant twice.
well, Grant was actually involved in the Western theater before he became commander of the entire forces. So, I guess you could say twice, but not as general commander.
Right.
But he went through several other generals before he ever reached them. So, they actually didn't meet until late into the Civil War. Face-to-face.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
He's quite a character. Now, I wouldn't... Oh, we have a phone call, but I'm going to have to pass on the phone call because we're down to...
Call back
to,
after the break.
Yeah, please call back after the break, and we'll take that up. You're listening to On the Air, and I'm going to pass on this caller because we only have about 30 seconds left to go, and we will go a little deeper into Grant... But he's up. Do you have somebody that does Grant in your president's thing? I'd love to talk to that person. That would be fun. All right. Well, you're listening to On the Air with Glenn Coble, and my guest today is Fred Malone from the Marion Historical Society. And we'll be back after about a 15-minute break, and stick with us.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 LP, Marion, Ohio, the place to talk. From legendary comedian Kay Ballard, performing the fast food song.
Oh, there's one song that you like. I feel like, fast foods have ruined the world. on the Champs-Élysées, on the Appian Way, there's McDonald's. By the Tomb of King Tut, there's a Chuck Full of Nuts and McDonald's. At the Scala, they sing by a Big Burger King, where the Styrofoam crackers go sweet. What's the use? What's the hell? I just heard Taco Bell went and franchised the wing at the Louvre. You know, I could go on and on and on, but that's it. I love things that are topical and that are kind of true.
The legendary actress and the voice of Ursula from The Little Mermaid, Pat Carroll.
Well, what we do without gossip, for heaven's sake, shut up! Oh, it's naughty, but it certainly fulfills a certain catty side of all of us. Oh, good Lord. When you think of the gossip sessions you've had with friends over the years, it's wonderful. It's like putting your hands in front of a lovely fire. I would do anything you want, Scott. You know I enjoy being on your show. But just let me talking and I keep going.
To the oldest working actor in Hollywood, 101-year-old Norman Lloyd.
Now, did you like that, Norman, when that edict came down? Did you like to be told to stop driving?
Well, I tell you, I liked the idea of driving, so I felt deprived that he was saying you can't drive anymore. But I enjoyed the authority with which he said to me, you cannot drive anymore. I thought, well, things have lined up pretty good now. I'm the kid and he's the old man. And, you know, it's continued on every level since. So I feel I'm in my second child. That I've got a new father.
Norman,
he has no humor about it at all. He says this is the way it is. And, you know.
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, The Talking Place. Streaming live on the internet at www.wwgh1071.com. Search for us on Facebook by typing in WWGH Marion, Ohio 107.1 FM and clicking like for exclusive content.
Programming on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM is supported by CRT Mechanicals. Address 2842 Marion Waldo Road, telephone number 740-225-4495, webpage crtmechanicals.com.
3, 2, 1. Oh no. Which button am I?
When every second counts, you can't wing it.
Guys, a little help up here?
In a home fire, you may have less than 2 minutes to get out. So make a family home fire escape plan. Then practice home fire drills at least twice a year so everyone knows what to do when they hear. Prepare your family at ready.gov/firedrill. Brought to you by FEMA, the Ag Council, and Make Safe Happen.
Hey everybody, it's Pastor Steve Whitaker from the Pastor Spot. We are on every Tuesday at 5:15 and replay again on Wednesday at 3:15. We take pertinent